The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Good morning. We've got a great show for you today. Thanks for joining us. We'll be talking to Kathy Capers and John Saroof about the power of small, intimate meals as a way to create a setting for conversations that matter. Nonprofits can do this as a way to deepen relationships with all of their stakeholders. Families can do this as a way to strengthen the family bond. Co-workers can do this to develop and maintain a sense of teamwork among colleagues. I'm really excited about this show, and we'll begin the interview in a few minutes. I'd like to open first with our World of Good segment, in which I'm going to share a story about our guest for next week's show, Sarah Grace. You know, the title for Bread for the Journey Radio is Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Things. Sarah Grace is the kind of person we had in mind when we chose that title. She's a very generous, progressive 75-year-old woman who works tirelessly for people with disabilities. And last week, she met with someone who has a different set of beliefs about how to solve the problems we face, the Republican governor of New Mexico, Susana Martinez. In their 25-minute meeting, they did find common ground in their passion to serve people with disabilities. So building on that common ground, they engaged in an impassioned discussion about how best to serve them. And Sarah said to me after the meeting, "When I looked at the photos from that afternoon, many of them included the governor with her arm around me. We had a conversation, a connection, a very honest conversation. I'm heartened." Sarah later wrote in an email, "There is only hope for this country if we learn to reach across the aisle, if we learn to hear the heart of each other, even when the song from my heart may come out with different lyrics than those from the heart of Governor Susana Martinez." Sarah went on to say in her email, "Here is how the famous activist poet Rainier Maria Rilke put it in his poem, Turning Point. For there is a boundary to looking, and the world that is looked at so deeply wants to flourish in love. Work of the eyes is done now. Go and do heart work on all of the images imprisoned within you." I want to thank you, Sarah, for being an inspiration to me this week. And now, hopefully to many others who are listening to this show, it is only when we nurture a generous heart that we come to live from a generous place in all we do. You just showed us what that looked like. You are my action hero for the week. In my second World of Good story, I'd like to highlight the best news I've heard in a long time. Yesterday, President Obama announced that the remaining 41,000 troops in Iraq will be home for the holidays. The Iraqi war is over. This war was estimated to have cost us $800 billion, not counting the interest we will pay, and 4,477 American lives. Tens of thousands came home wounded. Of the 151,000 Iraqi deaths, 122 of them were civilians. I am heartbroken by what these numbers represent, and I am heartened by the everyday civilians all over the world who are now speaking up for peace. This is a thank you to all who served in this war, to all who loved those who served, to President Obama for keeping his promise to end this war, and to everyone in public and private service who worked to bring us to this day. May the unrest that plagues Iraq today calm down. May all beings there and here and everywhere be safe, be free, and be happy. And now I'd like to introduce you to our two guests today, Kathy Capers and John Saroof. For 20 years, Kathy Capers has been helping diverse people talk to one another and organizations that serve people grow from within. From the back roads of Africa to the South Pacific Islands and the Caribbean, Kathy has worked to strengthen organizations in the field of health, education, and training. She is founding partner in Wellspring Resources, a business offering dialogue processes that reaches down and gets at the wisdom residing within the people they work with. She leads contemplative groups and retreats. Kathy is a founding member of our Bread for the Journey chapter in Austin. I've known her for 5 years. I love working with her and have learned so much from her in that time. I'm delighted to introduce her to you today. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning, Mariana. I'm really happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here. And I'd also like to introduce you to John Saroof. I'm going to read a statement he wrote because I think it best gets at who he is. Quote, passion. I love serving small groups who are doing the good work of building communities. I work to help people see the dynamics that are playing out in their efforts. Make them clear and shift them so that the individual's energy is freed up to do the work they were meant to be doing. I am endlessly hopeful that relationships can be repaired and partnerships reinforced. I see conflict not as something to be afraid of, but something to be listened to because it tells us where we have the potential for growth. End quote. John leads the research-based Family Dinner Project, which empowers families to have conversations that matter while sharing food and having fun together. Welcome, John.
Thank you so much, Mariana. It is a pleasure to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. Welcome to both of you. I'm going to begin with a few questions for Kathy to set up the story of how she came to learn about the work that you do, John. So, Kathy, you founded Bread for the Journey of Austin in 2006. How did you hear about Bread for the Journey, and what was it about the work that resonated for you?
I first learned about Bread for the Journey when its founder, Wayne Muller, visited Austin in 2006. He came to offer a lecture, actually, on another subject. I believe it was called The Rhythm of Honest Leadership. But within that lecture and workshop, he illustrated many of his points with examples from his work in Bread for the Journey. And he had us listening to and even experiencing the power of very small acts of generosity. And what resonated, well, towards the end of his lecture, he mentioned that chapters were growing around the country, but that Texas did not have one. So several of us in the audience took that as our call to create one here in Austin. And I think what most resonated with me from his stories and was the way that they were going about their community work. And much of it revolved around creating relationships, deepening relationships among people that may not ordinarily in a community be related to one another, bringing people together that had different gifts to offer. Someone in a community that was working to heal some aspect of that community with someone across town that might have resources they could bring to help them. And the other aspect of it that resonated with me coming from, you know, almost 20 years of working in nonprofit organizations was that to do the work well, it needs to be simple and it needs to be fun. It needs to be nourishing to the people doing the work. And at that time for me, that was a pretty, I'll admit, unbelievable concept. So that's what drew me into the work here in Austin.
And tell me just, if you can, one example of how something that you've done for Bread for the Journey was simple and fun and nourishing.
Well, I think the best example actually is the very recent example of when our board sat down and we, over the years, we had had an annual event where we brought some of the people that we had been able to give funding from other individuals in our community to together. And then we would invite pretty large numbers of the public to come and hear the stories of their work. So it had turned kind of into an event where people presented their work and other people listened. But what was missing from that for us, for me, was I didn't feel like people went away with new relationships. You know, they had heard very inspiring things, and but there wasn't much opportunity to get very deeply connected to one another. So we sat down as a board really just this year and said to ourselves, how could we make that more simple, because it was getting more elaborate and complicated with more people, and more fun for us. And also, how can we create an environment in where those relationships are deepened? It's another opportunity for people to go away having known one another. And so that's kind of where we hit on moving to very small, intimate dinner tables, where we still do invite people that we have been able to share funding with from other people in Austin, and we invite people who maybe provided some of that funding, and we invite people who haven't heard about Bread for the Journey. But we keep it very small, you know, 12 to 15 max. And it's turned out that it's, you know, been very fun for us and quite simple. We do it out of our home, and very nourishing for everyone.
This is great. We're going to take a short break now, but we're going to come back and continue talking with you about these small, intimate dinners. We're going to talk to John Saruf about his experience with such a thing with families, and we're going to talk about the work that you're actually funding in Austin, Texas, the grants that you give to small grassroots groups. If you who are listening have any questions for our guests, please email us at bfjradio@gmail.com. Please stay with us, and thank you.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Tune in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Voice America Variety Channel. It's practical, positive solutions for a happy, empowered, and successful life.
There are a number of health and social services available to individuals for low cost or no cost. Now there's a radio program devoted to bringing you the information you need. Tune in to Outreach Today with host Melissa Jenkins-Simon. Our program promotes the benefits and services of CI Incorporated, providing health and social services over a wide spectrum of resources and agencies. We want to help you. Tune in to Outreach Today, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Step into the doorway to conscious choice, greater health, and well-being. Attain the balance that you've been seeking.
Tune in and turn on 1111 Talk Radio. Feed the mind. Embrace positively. Release the tension. Step out of fear. Host Simran Singh will help you broaden your mind and open your heart toward a greater understanding of how to take charge of your life. 1111 Talk Radio is here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Seventh Wave Network. 1111 Talk Radio, because shift happens.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're talking today to Kathy Capers and John Saroof about the power of small, intimate meals as a way to create settings for conversations that matter. We'll be talking about those meals in a minute. We're trying to lay a little foundation for you. So, Kathy, I've got another question for you. Perhaps you can tell us a little bit about the actual work you're doing in communities in Austin and the role of generosity in your life, how it has moved and changed over these few years.
Sure. Let me start by just explaining a little bit how, you know, Bread for the Journey operates at the local level. It's very simple, and that's a big part of its draw. We raise money from individuals, and then we just keep our ears open. Sometimes we'll see something in the newspaper. More and more now, we just hear it through word of mouth about some ordinary person who has a vision for improving some aspect of our community. For example, a young woman who had had two children and it had very different experiences. One, you know, was kind of isolated in the hospital without much support, and one with a lot of support. And from her experience, and she was a nurse as well, and from working in the hospital, she created a project called GALS, Giving Austin Labor Support. And she had a number of volunteers that she was training in order to be by the bedside of women who came into the hospital to have birth and did not have any kind of emotional support. Some of these were women in prison. Some were recent immigrants. And most of our local projects are very similar to that. It's coming from someone's own personal experience. They generally are the ones who have the passion and the commitment and need very few resources to launch something that ends up having a pretty tremendous impact.
That's a beautiful story. And you were chatting with me earlier about generosity and how it has changed in the years that you've been involved in Bread for the Journey, how it has moved inside of you. Can you say a few things to our listeners about that? I think they'd be interested.
Well, you know, I think before I began this work, generosity for me was something about things that you give. And as I do this work longer and longer, I see that it's really more simple than that. It's more natural than that. It's really about who we are. And I see that most through meeting all of these people and seeing how they turn their experience into an offering. And I think, a lot of our role as board members for Bread for the Journey at the local level is just to create a place where people can come and really reveal who they are, what it is they have to offer. So in that way, for me, Bread for the Journey has really, you know, nurtured a whole different concept of generosity, and one that's more about just uncovering a very natural aspect of ourselves.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much. I think I'd like at this point to introduce John and talk a little bit about the work that you've done. John, as I understand it, you really love facilitating conversations that help people to know each other better, find common ground, and develop lasting bonds with one another. Tell us a little bit about about your own work and why you love it so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. And it is so inspiring to hear the work you're doing down there in Austin, Kathy. I really want to learn more about it. I want to come to one of those dinners. One of the I guess the thing that I love so much about small groups is that there is so much potential. There's so much energy. There's so much generosity, so much deep thinking that exists in a small group, whether they're working toward a common goal or whether they come from different parts of a community and are trying to make connections across that community, whether they know each other or they don't know each other. There is so much potential and energy and generosity in that group. And what's so exciting about working with groups for me is that if you can work with them, if you can create structures and an energy and a setting and common agreements, a way of approaching each other, a way of approaching the other, you can unleash that potential. You can reveal the individuals and the power that each individual has. And you open up a space for people to bring all of their own individual power, their own generosity to that space. And I see incredible things come out of that, either in places of creativity where they're trying to envision a new future, or in places of resolution, you know, reconciliation, where they're trying to heal wounds of the past. In no matter what it is, if there's a small group that is committed to being together and working together, they can do incredibly powerful things. And that's why the work you're doing, Kathy, sounds so exciting to me.
This is great. You know, I was thinking about the progression of things that happened with you, Kathy, what you personally brought to the work in Austin, your experience in your professional life working around conversations that matter, your attraction to Bread for the Journey because of the sense of relationship, your longing for the deeper connections between people, which led you to creating these small and intimate dinners. And then, of course, John, you, the work that you've done, and all around the world, and your research about reconciliation that finally led you to begin looking at family dinners through this particular lens. I'm just fascinated by this process of sharing a meal together and conversations that matter at the same time. So I want to talk with you, Kathy, about your experience in Austin and how these dinners have been. But I want to ask you, John, first, tell us a little bit about the family dinners and what you learned about the effect of family dinners and the way you made it work.
Yeah, well, there's incredible research about the power of family dinners, and it's been going on for a number of years now, and it really is what grounds the work that we're doing at the Family Dinner Project. Family dinners have the ability to enhance children's intellectual functioning, to promote their mental health and improve their physical health and nutrition. The studies show that it increases children's self-esteem, and it's more effective in terms of developing vocabulary than even reading to them, which is just an incredible thing. I was speaking to a school teacher just recently about how the students that she has in her class who are have family dinners on a regular basis, she sees their ability to write full sentences and stories and think in a narrative is so much more clear than those who don't, because they are sitting and listening to stories, and they're sitting and listening to narratives and are expected to join in. And that's part of what we love about the work that we're doing at Family Dinner Project. It's really about this inclusion at the family dinner. Bill Doherty, who does a lot of work on family dinners in Minnesota, talks about how at a dinner, it's really a time to include your children and not just to have adult talk. And so we're working a lot in our work about how parents include children, how to speak to children to draw them into a conversation, to make them feel empowered and part of it, and how stories are handed down from generation to generation, and how the family table is a space to have that happen. We also think of it as a way for children to develop their ethical thinking, to think through dilemmas, to hear stories about choices that parents have made in their own lives, and to begin to develop the capacity to make some of those choices in their own lives. And the space of food is just an incredible a bridge for so many of those things. We saw that when I was over in Lebanon, when I was researching how they have reconciled after their civil war. And so many moments that I was witnessing while I was there studying, points of reconciliation, points of connection were done over food. It continually astonishes me how the process of eating brings us together. It's such a common, basic human need that we both share. It's such an early point of reconciliation for us, and that's why it's become so meaningful to me.
Oh, thank you so much. And I think about hospitality and food as well, you know, somebody bringing something to the table and that nourishes, and then other people bringing something to the table. There's something about that caring for one another with food that I think probably contributes to the warmth and, I don't know, conversation that happens at the table.
It is such a generous act. It is such an act of compassion to bring food to the table. And one of the things we do is to encourage children to be part of that, because so often we have a model in our families that parents will do the cooking and put it on the table, and it's about dragging your children there. But if you can engage the children in actually making something, and the pride that they have in bringing something to the table to share with you. So we're really trying to encourage children to cook and to begin that early place of generosity, to begin to instill in them how beautiful it is to make something and to feed somebody else.
That's really great. And I was also struck by a word you spoke earlier, which was inclusion. And we're going to take a little break, and I want to come back and talk with Kathy about that sense of inclusion and the people she's bringing to the table for these small and intimate dinners, and talk with you a little bit more about that, John. If any of you who are listening have questions for our guests today, please email us at bfjradio@gmail.com. Please stay with us. Thank you so much.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Who or what fills you up? How do you talk to yourself about yourself? Do you feel like your life isn't where you want it to be, that you are underappreciated, or that your relationships leave you wanting? Tune in every week as Dr. Debbie gives you something to think about, a reality check that will allow you to take charge of what goes on in your life. Your life is happening now. Don't waste another minute. Tune in Mondays at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel and listen to It's About You with Dr. Debbie. Explore the power and beauty in yourself and in others. Tune in to The Stacey Stern Show, enriching you. Every week, Stacey Stern will connect you with men and women who are living and working from a place of passion. Stacey's guests include successful authors, filmmakers, actors, experts, and leaders. You'll hear what inspires each of them, and you'll be turned on to great films, books, and new media. Tune in to The Stacey Stern Show, enriching you. Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking to Kathy Capers and John Saroof about the power of small, intimate meals as a way to create the setting for conversations that matter among diverse groups of people or family members. But I'd like to ask Kathy a question here. One of the things that John brought up in his last question was about this sense of inclusion, you know, this good thing that people feel about being included when you're sitting around a table and everybody's invited to participate in the meal and in the conversation at the meal. And now you're bringing groups of people together for these small intimate dinners, and it's a few people who are grantees, people you've given grants to do their projects in the world, a few people who are donors who have contributed time and money to Bread for the Journey to help keep the whole thing going, and then a few board members who help also contribute their time and talent to keep things going. So now we've got a diverse group of people, some who have met, some who haven't met, and you bring them together in these small intimate dinners. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I will, because that's quite it takes some intention, really, to meet the goal of having everyone's voice equally heard and everyone have an opportunity to be listened to. We do bring, I would say, you know, most of the people that come to our table are strangers to one another when they enter. And we have these dinners in the home, and we really limit the time that people are kind of, you know, cocktail party-ish casting about with one another. We bring people very quickly to the table. I mean, we have a few moments while people are entering and getting something to drink, and but then we very, you know, pretty promptly move to the table, and we begin. We're sort of very explicit about our intention that we really would like for people to leave the evening having feel like they know one another, or an important aspect of one another. So as we sit down and provide food for people, we also provide a question. We give some little focus that, and it's usually a question that anyone can answer at any level that they're comfortable. So, for example, the question that we found that has worked for the last couple of dinners very well is, what nourishes you? And so we just, as we sit down, we say, you know, we'd love to hear from each of you about what it is in your life right now that is nourishing you. And a little later, we're going to hear, you know, more in depth about some people that are doing some very nourishing work in our community. And that that focused question, I think, is a very important aspect of people feeling included. And it's been our experience that, you know, people go around sort of one by one, but maybe in popcorn style. You know, it's not a forced march around the table. And they answer that at a depth that is, you know, not your usual dinner time conversation. And the result of that has been, for example, our last dinner, a gentleman called me who was a guest there, and just to say that all the way home, about three or four of them just carried on about they hadn't been to a dinner gathering where they had felt so listened to or been able to learn so much about people they didn't know about in years, if ever. And that's when we know we've accomplished our goal.
That's right.
It's so interesting. If I can just say that the way you frame that question, you've really invited people to go to a really deep place there. And I can imagine that people want to go there so often, and we just don't in our daily lives know how to. We don't walk up to a friend and get, you know, very deep into a colleague. Go right at the heart of what matters and what we're thinking about and what we care about. And the way you frame that question, what nourishes you, is such a lovely way to go to that place and invite people to go there with you. That's inspiring.
Oh, I agree.
Thank you. And I think the other important part of it is, you know, the whole dinner table. I mean, we know we're going to be there for some time. So we've kind of set the context that people can, imagine that they're going to have some time to speak and listen together. They're not going to be rushed out. And I think also, you know, we're talking a lot about generosity today. And I think, John, something that you said sparked a thought in me that generosity, really, one of the most generous things I think that we can do, and it sounds a little paradoxical, but is to receive. Is yes. To receive one another. And that's kind of what these dinners are about. We are receiving these strangers into our home, and they are receiving one another as they listen intently to one another about important work they're doing or things that are important to them.
That's a beautiful insight, Kathy. I often say listening to one another is one of the most generous things we can do. And I think we long to be seen. We long to be validated, to be heard. Sometimes, in my experience, we see ourselves best when we say out loud what it is that is going on in our life. Sometimes we can't even get there in the silence of our own journey. I hear what I'm thinking when I speak it aloud. So I agree with you completely that when given a space to do that, everything feels like it comes alive and we feel connected and included and part of a community. John, I'm wondering, when you're in the work that you did in the family dinners, if you focused your dinners around a question, and if so, what?
Yeah, we do. And there are some wonderful questions on our website, conversation starters. And the power of a question is really central to the work that we do in families. And I also, the Public Conversations Project, which is the organization that is sort of the group that I work for that has taken the Family Dinner Project on as a major initiative for it, really its work and dialogue is grounded in fundamental questions. And so we have a whole list of them. And there's a blog up on our website about asking children, you know, at the family dinner about where the food came from and how it came to our tables. There's a blog on there just asking that question and the kinds of answers that it can bring up in terms of, you know, who did the work to get food on our table for us, all the way starting from a farmer that saved a seed you know, from last year's crop and planted it again this year, and all the people who took care of that seed to grow it into a plant and harvested it and inspected it and drove it to the store and put it on the shelves. And then we go and we take it and we bring it home, and then we cook it in our pots and we then put it on the table. Or wonderfully, if you have it in your backyard and you plant the seed yourself and you bring it in, and the impact on the world of those two choices, a simple question like that can be really fun, because you're talking about this wonderful chain of being, you know, this wonderful transportation chain, a growth chain. And you're also talking about the ethics of eating locally and the ethics of energy and the importance of being thoughtful and mindful of what people do to bring food to us. So it's questions are very, very powerful, and we encourage families to ask questions that open up conversations like that. Not yes or no questions, not necessarily questions with the right answer, but questions that help open up an experience and new thoughts for people.
Oh, that's beautiful. So I want to restate for our listeners where they can get some of these questions, because I think there will be people who want to go and experiment a bit with this, whether it's with their family or with their community in other settings. Tell us again where we might find these questions, John.
So, we have a website. It's www.thefamilydinnerproject.org. So let's spell the whole thing out, thefamilydinnerproject.org, and you can sign up, and you'll be sent a welcome to the Family Dinner Project, and there are resources on there for everything, how to overcome challenges. There's a whole section on there about the research, about how this work is really benefits emotional health and lower rates of obesity and eating disorders and all of that work, but also how to overcome certain challenges. And, you know, we find so much that at different stages of your family's life, you run into different challenges, from little kids just trying to get them to try foods or even stay at the table, to when, you know, they get a little bit older and our lives are so busy. How do we rethink family dinner? If we can't get to family dinner, can we do family breakfast? And I want to just pick up quickly on what something Kathy said earlier. She talked about intention, about really being intentional about this. And that's what's important. So it doesn't matter if it's breakfast or lunch or dinner, or whether it's a snack after school. It's about the intention of being together in a way and wanting to be together and communicate. The www.thefamilydinnerproject.org.
And you also mentioned another website called, was it Conversation Starters?
We have conversation starters on our website.
Okay,
so
got it.
You can just click on that.
Great.
Piece, and there are also some great resources out there. There are some boxes of conversation starters. I've bought a whole bunch of them, and Table Talk might be. I don't have the name. I'll try to get the name, and I'll get it to you. But there are some really great resources for families to get those conversations started, because it's not maybe the most natural thing for everybody to do that in their own family. And so it's just a good aid.
I think it becomes natural with practice. You sort of uncover and discover your ability to do that. So we are going to take a break here, and we'll come back for one more session with Kathy and John. And if you've got any questions for us, please feel free to write to us at bfjradio@gmail.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You were born a visionary. How do you get closer to your personal vision? tune in to Visionary Radio with Giselle. Our program is all about evidence-based positive change. Giselle and her guests will bring you stories of positive visions achieved, hope and renewal, designed to inspire you in ways that matter in your life, in ways that last and bring you closer to who and where you want to be. This program is for and about real people, and we want you to be a part of it too. Tune in to Visionary Radio with Giselle every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. Drawing on resources from wellness communities throughout America and abroad, the show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Wellness Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain inspired really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're talking to Kathy Capers and John Saroof about the power of small, intimate meals as a way to create settings for conversations that matter and the deepening of relationships. We received a question, and I'd like to throw it out to you. Hi, Kathy and John. I love what you're speaking about and wonder what your experiences are regarding using similar principles within organizations. Can we guide corporate and nonprofits to tap into such principles for their own betterment? And this came from a woman named Sheila Armitage.
That's a great question, Mariana. And I'd like to start just by saying, you know, there's not a setting that I cannot imagine using a lightly structured dialogue process to help people feel included and empowered and to draw out the wisdom that really resides within each of us. And I have had the opportunity and the experience to work within both a corporate and a nonprofit setting, bringing, you know, such a process, just a very lightly structured process. A key to it is what we talked about in the last segment, having a vital question. And often, most of the time preparing for an effective dialogue will be spent in consultation with people from that organization to identify what is the vital question. What is the question that maybe employees are talking about around the water cooler, or maybe the question they're afraid to bring up? But it's identifying that key question and to make sure it's a question that everyone at every level of the organization can have input into.
Yeah, I agree entirely. This is the work that I think corporations and nonprofit organizations need to be doing. The Public Conversations Project, which is where we work, that's largely what we focus on, is trying to foster those conversations in organizations and communities like that. I entirely agree.
Do you ever have, how do you manage people that talk too much?
Well, the process, you know, the process itself kind of manages that. I mean, mm-hmm. What I'm used to working with is some structured rounds of conversation. So people are very clear from the outset, you know, what the timing is. You know, we might say something in the early rounds, like, you know, in a sentence or two, or in take about 2 or 3 minutes. if they need a reminder, we can give them kind of a nonverbal reminder so we're not breaking into their conversation, but they see that they need to wind up. So that's what you offer who you bring this process to. You bring a very safe, inclusive method for hearing one another.
Great. And I'm wondering in organizations, Kathy, and John, you might answer this question as well. How do you arrive at a question that feels like everybody had some input on? Because typically I imagine when you've been hired, perhaps by somebody in the organization, usually, a higher up in the organization, how do you get at some of those questions that you know everybody is talking about?
I'll speak to it, and then Kathy, one of the really important things about doing work in an organization is really including and hearing from the people in the organization. So we do a lot of prep work, a lot of interviews, a lot of surveys, a lot of asking deep questions about what's going on for people in an organization to try to reveal what it is that's important to them. So then you begin to see patterns of what people are talking about. And obviously, we try to work with a team of people to structure the dialogue in a group. So you'd get a leadership group or a group of people that are empowered by the larger organization to help us as facilitators approach them. So the process is really being built by them. We're just helping in terms of almost being a process people. We can, we have some knowledge of how to structure a question to make it an open question, to make it accessible to everybody. But the information is really coming from the organization itself.
And I have one last question about food connected to this. Can you do, I have no idea if it's ever been done, but can you do, I suppose you can, small groups within organizations that have that warm quality of sharing a meal together? Have either of you ever done that?
I was working at a university for a while, and we've used small groups within the university around mealtime quite a bit to carry on conversations. And it's actually one of the things the Family Dinner Project thinks of itself as doing, is working in an organization, and that each family within an organization is really a member, that's a unit within the organization, and that the Family Dinner Project can hopefully encourage a community or a church, a faith group, a school to have a broader conversation about things that are really important to it or about a particular situation that's coming up. So we're working with schools, we're working with churches to help foster, a broader conversation as well as the intimate conversations of a particular family.
I just love this conversation, and I hope everybody who's listening will experiment with this and perhaps even send us an email. I'd be happy to pass it on to Kathy and John about anything you might be doing in your families, in your organizations, in your spirit-based communities, your small nonprofits, community groups, political groups, and I encourage you to come together and share a meal and experiment with this. It feels like a fun thing to do and an encouraging thing to do. So I want to thank you, John and Kathy, both for sharing a little bit with us about how this has been done in your communities.
Thank you, Mariana.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mariana. It's really been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me as well. And I'd like to invite our listeners to join us next Saturday when I interview Sarah Grace. The title of our next show will be Working to Make the World a Better Place, a perspective from 75 years of living. Sarah, as I spoke about earlier in the show today, to me exemplifies the phrase, a life well lived. She's not a person of great wealth, nor has she traveled the world or written a book. Her life well lived was created one small step at a time by mindfully living each moment with integrity. She lives her life caring for others and herself. She is generous and courageous. She has chutzpah, and at the same time, she walks with humility. And one thing that stands out the most is that she's playful. I want you to meet her. Please join us next week. And finally, if you'd like to support the work of Bread for the Journey, we hope you'll go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. If everyone pitches in a little bit, we can make this world a better place. Thank you. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free. See you next week.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.